We're fortunate to have joining our program today Sharon Abbott. Sharon Abbott is the founder of Elite Leads, a business development organization dedicated to helping people find success in their own passionate work. Since 1991, Sharon has helped more than 2,000 people become successful entrepreneurs, with more than 90% of them still in business, which is an amazing success rate considering that 90% of companies fail in their first 2 years. She attributes her client success to the educational environment and relationship building techniques that she teaches. She's appeared on Oprah Winfrey Show, where she was featured for her innovative concepts on positive communication techniques, and has been featured as a keynote speaker at national conferences. Sharon is also the author of Mixing It Up, a book that is dedicated to leading entrepreneurs to success. Another book, JOBS, Just Over Broke Syndrome, for anyone who has ever thought of starting their own business. And Making a List and Checking It Twice, an inspirational guide to help singles choose a great mate. She's recognized nationally as an entrepreneurial advocate and teaches highly creative courses for those branching out on their own, like Speakeasy, Street Smart Sales, and Your Right to Write. Today we're going to talk about Create Your Own Reality, living your life on purpose. Most people live each month and each year the same as the past, often living two separate lives, one at work and a completely different one the rest of the time. They may not even be aware that they're not living their life on purpose, or know how they can change what they're doing to make their life more in sync with their desires and their beliefs. Many people find that they're working at jobs that supports them financially, or in many cases only allows them to survive. When we live our passion, every day is a joy and adventure. How can you discover your perfect life's work? That's what we're going to talk about today. Sharon's going to cover several strategies that will help you create your own purposeful avocation and make your dreams a reality. Thank you for joining us today, Sharon.
Thank you, Joseph. It's a real pleasure.
All right. You know, I guess the most obvious question is, why do you think that people don't live their life on purpose? What happens? How do we get caught up and stuck in doing things that we don't really want to do ultimately?
I think part of it is that people need permission to live their life on purpose. So they get stuck in a job that they fall into because that's what they went to college for, or maybe one of their parents suggested that that's what they should do for a living. And then they get so caught up in just surviving financially that they never really see a way of breaking out.
Well, I've seen the success you've had. I've known people personally that you have worked with over the years, and I see what a change it makes in a person to break out of the mold, their own mold that perhaps they gave to themselves or they adopted from early authority figures, their parents and early teachers and so on. And what a blossoming occurs when someone breaks out of the job or the thing that they've been doing in the past and really follows their passion. It's really wonderful to see.
It's amazing. I mean, you've lived your entire life on purpose, but very few people think that they have a right to do that. How many times growing up do we hear, you know, it's hard work. You have to work really hard at living, and it's not necessary. I think we make it a lot harder than it has to be.
Yeah. Well, when everyone seems to be so busy with their jobs and their families, how do they go about taking the steps to live more purposeful, and especially if that means venturing out into another business or consulting or speaking or writing, whatever direction they might be headed? I mean, it does seem daunting to a person, with their existing commitments. How do they go about doing that?
Well, I'm sure you've heard of the adage, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Right.
It's the same way. If you're in a job or you're in a career that just doesn't suit your personality, a half an hour a day directed at having a timeline that 1 year from now you'll be doing exactly what you love.
Mm.
That's all it takes. A lot of times it's less than 3 months.
Wow. And so is that the kind of timeline you would suggest to someone, somewhere between 3 and 12 months, to give themselves a pathway towards their purposeful advocation or what they think they might want to do, and then just take it one step at a time?
It basically creating the timeline, and the length of the timeline has to do with the amount of income that they have to generate to be comfortable in their lifestyle. Because I firmly believe that your business should support your lifestyle instead of driving you crazy.
Again, this program is thriving through the shift of the ages, how to master stress in rapidly changing times. Of course, you know, going to a job or doing something 8 hours a day that you're not really all that thrilled about is incredibly stressful.
You know, the IRS did a study back in 1990 that shocked me. They said that less than 1 in 8 people do something to earn their income that they enjoy. And we've known for over 20 years that more heart attacks happen on Monday morning than 6.5 days of the week combined.
Wow.
We cannot keep going out in our life and doing something that is not fulfilling, that's wasting our lives.
Right. I guess as interesting as the results of that study, I was curious that the IRS was looking at that particular subject.
They do a lot of really interesting studies. I find that their statistics are very helpful in convincing people that they need to take action now.
Well, that's good to know. Good to know. Interesting results from that study as well. Well, what have you found to be the biggest challenge that people face in creating their ideal life work?
It's the unknown. People are very challenged by anything that means they have to change what they're doing today. So if you don't know what it's going to take to start a business that you've never done but you've always thought would be fun, but it looks good. Like when I went into the travel industry, everybody said, oh, what a great business that is. I only did it so that I could build something that I could retire on. And unfortunately, 6 months after buying the travel agency, the Gulf War started in 91. So bad timing on my part. But I look at people like there was a young lady that I worked with. She had been pouring coffee at a local coffee house in Walnut Creek, and she got laid off. And imagine how demoralizing it would be to have a job that barely paid a little over minimum wage and to get laid off because there wasn't enough business. So when I sat down with her, I said, I want to know at least 3 things that make you excited. Like on Saturday morning, you have nothing to do, no obligations, money isn't an issue, what do? She said, I love being around my animals and I love being outside. So I thought about it for a while and I said, you know, I think that we could start a dog walking business. And she laughed at me and I said, no, wait a minute. We live in a metropolitan area where people during the week are leaving before the sun's up. They come home after the sun's down and they have their favorite pet that needs to get out and get some exercise. Why don't you figure out what it would take for you to justify walking a dog for an hour? And how many dogs can you walk at a time? So she ended up with 4 dogs an hour, and within a year she was making about $40,000. Her third year she made $120,000, and she was having 5 students walk the dogs for her.
And what was this a transition from? What was her...
She was pouring coffee at a coffee house.
Oh, my goodness.
So she ended up buying a piece of property up in Clayton. She has a kennel. She is living the life of her dreams, and 3 years before had thought that her life was destined to minimum wage.
Wow. What would you say? What was the switch that got turned on for her?
You know, I think that she needed to know that she could do this, that in her whole life people had said, oh, just get a job, any job, as long as you can pay your bills. And so she believed that she had to do that. Her whole family, not one person had ever been an entrepreneur. No one had guided her and encouraged her. It was just like, you know, take any job you can get. And if you're trying to survive, that's okay for a time being. But when it becomes a life habit, that's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, wrong for your soul. Definitely wrong.
It's like sleepwalking through your life.
And the same thing probably applies to people that have professional jobs even. They may consider themselves an attorney or a nurse or an accountant or some other profession where they're making very good income, and they have other things in mind that they would like to be doing. Perhaps they're already doing them. Maybe it's music or art or travel or whatever, what have you. And they just don't know how to make that transition. They're in a sense trapped by their own success. What would you say to someone like that if they were to come to you?
Well, typically we only know what we know.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest that if they're just out there trying to survive doing something and it's not really heartfelt, go find someone that's doing exactly what they want to do.
Mm.
Interview them. Find out how they started. People are so generous. I have found if you ask for help, you're rarely ever turned down. And if someone turns you down, they're not someone you want to listen to anyway.
Right.
So you pick and choose the people who are in your life. And the more you investigate, what did someone do to get where they are in your mind, thinking that they have the picture of a successful life? And that doesn't mean that they're making the most money doing what they're doing. It means that they have the lifestyle that appeals to you. So how much time are they working? Where do they live? How much time do they spend with their family and friends? What's the balance?
Right. Right. Well, that's very good, actually. In other words, whatever it is that you want to do, model someone who's successful at it.
You don't have to reinvent it from scratch. If you can find somebody who's already done it, learn from their experience. I mean, everyone knows Wayne Dyer, and he's an internationally well-known author and speaker.
Yes.
He did that. He actually interviewed a multimillionaire, and he said, "How'd you get here? What happened?" Wayne Dyer was sleeping on a bale of hay. He couldn't even afford an apartment when he started interviewing this millionaire.
Hmm.
And look at him today. You know, most people who are extremely successful and are happy will tell you that they didn't start out with everything in their life that they have today. It was a lot of work for them. Why do you have to work that hard? Why can't you learn from other people's experience?
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Well, how can people approach the challenges that they'll obviously face when making this transition from their job or changing from a job to becoming an entrepreneur and doing their own thing? What's the best way for them to deal with that? Because that's inevitably going to come up. It may be coming up in the listeners' minds right now as we're talking about this.
I don't think there's a single challenge out there that doesn't have a solution. And that is my underlying belief. I believe that is why I've been able to accomplish everything that I have. A lot of people who know me well think that I'm a master of many things. And it's because I take one thing at a time and I tear it apart, look at it from all sides, find out how I can make it better, and I keep working at it until I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. If people only realize that there is nothing insurmountable in their life, whether it's financial, the job, their family life, their friends, each and everything can be challenged until they have their life redesigned and the exact way that it's perfect for them. And there's no two lives that are exactly the same. So we take out of our day-to-day life the lessons that we need to learn. So when somebody's struggling in their job or their family, then what they need to look at is, why is the struggle here? Is it the resistance they have to what's going on? Or is there something that they're capable of changing? And if they think that they're not capable of changing, ask for help. Find an expert. Get other people's advice. Bring friends over for dinner. Have, you know, a couple bottles of wine and brainstorm until you come up with solutions. And just because you have one solution today doesn't mean it's going to be perfect 6 months or a year from now.
Right. And it's interesting what you're saying. When, in other words, recognize that every challenge has a solution and pour your energy into the solution. Don't become immobilized by the challenge.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah, and what I keep hearing from you, and I've seen the way you work with people, this really all boils down to about relationships, doesn't it?
More than anything, it's who you surround yourself with. So if everyone you know is complaining about the economy, complaining about their family, complaining about their jobs, guess what? It rubs off on you.
Right.
So start associating with people who are positive, who are creative, who look at something and go, I know how I can do that better.
Right, right. Well, are there specific methods that you would suggest to someone? Let's say they don't know what their passionate work is. I know many of our listeners, I would say, are going to fall into probably three or four categories. Those who know what their passion or calling is, but they're not pursuing it for the reasons we've talked about. They're comfortable financially and they don't want to take that leap. There are those that have some inkling of what their passion or what they'd really like to be doing, but they're not sure. They're kind of reluctant to pursue it because of doubts, lack of clarity, and so on. There are those that know there's something unique for them, but don't have much idea what it is and how to go about finding it. What would you say to that last group?
Well, the last group, if they have no idea how to find out their passion, one of the ways, like I did with Sue the dog walker, is I said, okay, what would you do if you had no financial obligations, you had no constraint on your time? There has to be something that excites you. And I had one young man, he said that the only thing he really enjoyed was golf. And he was pretty good at it.
Hmm.
So I suggested that he start a golf clinic for kids that are preteen.
Hmm.
You know, how many fathers would love to have their sons play golf with them, but get frustrated trying to teach their kids, just like dads get frustrated trying to teach their kids to drive.
Right.
So there were enough fathers that said, yes, absolutely, and we did a test market. And sure enough, it's been, I think, 7 years, and that's his full-time advocation.
That's fabulous. You know, what just struck me as I heard you saying this is, you know, when people get locked into this mode of not doing what they want to do, their life becomes inherently stressful. Stress, the physiological result of stress, is an inhibition in your creativity. And
exactly.
One of the things that you do so effectively with people is you help them be creative around where they could do, because I could where they could go, because I could see this gentleman that was very good at golfing. In his mind, the only solution was probably becoming a professional golfer, and that would stop him.
And that was beyond his ability in his own mind.
Yes, but working with you, you allowed him some creativity, and you know, I'd love everyone to work with you in that range. But let's say someone can't work with you, they're out of the U.S. or for whatever reason. How would you suggest someone go about being creative like that?
Well, there's a very unique concept that I think is really fun. Most of us balance back and forth between left brain logic and right brain creative.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking about doing your career, most people go to logic. I think I should do this because I can earn so much money.
Right.
Well, what would happen if you said, I feel I want to do, then you're going to emotion, which is more on the creative side. So one of the techniques to figure this out is you might go through a series of word exercises. I have fun when. I laugh when. I enjoy my day when. The best time I have is. And you create these sentences, and there will be a common denominator. Then another way of doing it is, these are all the talents that I feel I possess. I sew, I cook, I read, I make jewelry, I can write, I love speaking. And then you ask your friends, what do you think I'm really good at? And there's a correlation.
Do you think some people would have a challenge asking their friends?
If they do, then they're not being brave enough. I wouldn't necessarily ask family members, because family members,
right,
a lot of times want to hold the rest of the family to the same level of success or not successful,
yeah,
lifestyles,
mm-hmm,
so that nobody gets uncomfortable. So if you ask your friends, then you have a better chance of getting an impartial answer. So you want people to be neutral. You don't want to ask your friend that, you know, doesn't want you ever to win a game, and that's not the friend to ask.
Hmm.
But when people are very supportive of you, maybe it's a working colleague that has nothing to lose by giving you an honest answer.
Right. Right. And often people become so consumed with their work that they're absorbed. All their processes, in fact, all their friends are around their work. But if their passion really is completely separate from that and they're not giving any energy, they're not devoting any attention towards that, they may be completely unplugged from a possible network. So in an extreme case like that, how would you suggest someone stimulate some creativity around where they could be going with that?
Well, typically, there has to be some venue in their life where they can access people who know them, whether it's church or whether it's a school or somewhere where people are going to help them discover something about them that will inspire a direction for them to go. You know, I worked in a Fortune 500 company and thought I was doing what I was supposed to do to take care of myself when it was time to retire. And after 8.5 years, I went into the office to receive my accolade for being up in the top 10% in sales. And my sales manager sent me home in a taxi after telling me that they had eliminated my position because of an accounting error. Now, at the time, as someone had said, that was the best thing that could have happened to me. There was nothing that anybody could do to convince me of that.
Right.
And I have found through all of the challenges in my life that the biggest challenge is often the biggest gift.
Yes.
So if we look at something that's not working and we go, okay, where's the gift in this? What is it that I can make the lemonade out of the lemon through this experience? Instead of getting involved in the stress and the emotion and the negativity and poor me and being a victim, how do we turn that around and look at it as, this is the most perfect thing that could happen because now I can do what I want to do. It can be on purpose.
You know, you just stated differently a very profound metaphysical principle, and that is, what we focus upon expands.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, getting back to this idea of modeling successful people, let's say an individual wants to embark out on their own, but they don't know anyone who's an entrepreneur. How would they create a support system that would be useful for them in nurturing their desires or their passions towards their work?
Well, if they don't really know any entrepreneurs, I would suggest maybe a first stop would be a chamber of commerce. That way they can be around entrepreneurs who have been in business for a while, and they can learn just by associating with other successful people. Most chambers have business meetings, whether it's a luncheon, a mixer, at the evening time where people gather and just find out what everybody else is doing. There are environments through Rotary Clubs, Lions Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, lots of service organizations that you can go and associate with other people who are in business. And you can visit these clubs multiple times without having to be a member, so it gives you an opportunity to see what different business environments there are out there that maybe you're comfortable in one versus another. And maybe you'll meet a person who happens to be a perfect mentor. And thinking about a mentor, what stimulates your idea of success? Is it the ease of which they embody their lifestyle, their means of communicating with other people? I'm going to say in the neighborhood of about 200 people every month, and I would say less than 10% are completely comfortable in their business, in their social life, in their family life, in their financial life. So those are the people I navigate to. I am so attracted to people who have that aura of success, where they're calm, their light is on in their eyes. They inspire other people to have a good time.
Right.
That's what I would look for.
Right. And that doesn't happen unless someone really is in their passion, that really liking what they're doing. That's so obvious when you meet someone like that, but it's really unfortunate that 90% of people aren't doing that.
And you can tell even by body language. When someone walks into a room, are they not standing up straight? Do they look people in the eye? Do they have a smile on their face? You know, they have that air of confidence. You can tell when somebody possesses the life that they have mapped out for themselves rather than just existing. There's Les Brown, who is an internationally well-known speaker, says that most people die at 21. They just don't get buried until after they're 70.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, is that not to the point?
Yes. Yeah. It's unfortunate that we do that to ourselves. But that's why we're here. We're here to help people change that. Now, you had talked about don't hang around people that are down and complaining. The other side of that is make sure you're hanging around people that are at least a level above where you feel like you are now. Can you talk about that and how important that is in terms of your relationships and networking?
There is a study that's been out through Stanford for, I'm going to say, 20 years, and they have found that if you look at your four people that you typically gravitate to, two make less money than you, two make more money than you. And so you develop this comfort zone, like you're in the middle. And so if you start directing yourself to hang out with four people who make money than you, what you'll find in a short period of time is that all of a sudden you're in the middle income range between the four people. So if you keep challenging yourself to move yourself up into a level where people are very successful in their business, they're very comfortable financially, they have really good family lives, their social life is balanced, then through those associations, you will find that you adapt to that comfort level.
And that makes sense, too, because you're more likely to encounter people at those levels that you will end up networking with that will open doors, create opportunities, and so on.
Right. I was in an event back in 1989, and I couldn't believe the conversations. They were so off course from where I wanted to be, and I made a statement to someone. I said, I need new friends. And it was kind of in a joke. And 1 year later, I was standing at a holiday party, and I heard one couple talking about a movie they had gone to, another couple who had discovered a new restaurant, somebody else who had just found this book that they were just so enthused about. And I looked around the room, and I went, in 1 year, I have changed all of my associations without any plan to do so other than stating 1 year before that I wasn't happy with the people I was being with. And the only reason was the negativity that I was surrounded by instead of the positive attitude and people who would look up long enough to realize there's more to life than just complaining about what's going on.
Right. And, you know, this dovetails in nicely with some of the other dialogues that we're having with Dr. Lipton, The Biology of Belief, Dr. Roger Nelson, where these good vibes and bad vibes, they're real, tangible things that affect our cells, they affect our bodies, they affect our moods, they affect the world around us.
Exactly. And if you don't believe in that, walk into a room and observe the energy of the room, and you can tell, is it a good mood, is it a bad mood? And then try to change the mood of the room. Walk around and be enthusiastic and shake hands and make people laugh, or walk around the room and start complaining, and you literally can change the entire atmosphere of a room full of people within 30 minutes. We receive and we send energy without even knowing that we're doing that. So we have an innate responsibility to create the kind of positive environment that we want to participate in.
Right. And I like hearing you say, and it comes out in everything that you do, that it's not just about making the right amount of money. When you talk about looking at successful people, someone who makes a lot of money but is unhappy, unfulfilled, has a distorted or dysfunctional family life, you know, these things need to be taken into consideration. They need to be done in balance. And when you embark on a new entrepreneurial venture, you have to take these things into consideration.
I think most people have heard of the Yale study from 1952, where they had the graduating class write down their goals.
Hmm. What, can you repeat the name of the study?
It's from Yale University.
Yeah, okay.
And they brought the graduates back 20 years later. Well, it turns out that only 3% of the graduates actually wrote out their goals and paid attention to them.
Yes.
That 3% had 80% of the entire class's shared wealth. But what most people didn't read further in the study was the 3% that wrote their goals down were still married to their first spouse and considered themselves to be happy in their home life.
Hmm.
So a lot of times, you know, it's like sleepwalking through your life, like I mentioned. People don't know what they want, so they're willing to accept anything.
Right.
And when you declare, this is what I want in my life, then the universe has a way of supplying you with exactly what you're looking for. But if you're willing to take anything, you get anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, be careful what you ask for and be careful what you don't ask for.
Exactly.
Right. Good. Very good. Well, back to some more practical matters. What resources do you recommend to keep individuals on track of business development and actually developing their business properly and efficiently?
I think a timeline is the most effective tool. So when I want to write a new book, I think, okay, I want to have it published June 1st. How many pages do I have to write on a weekly basis to have the book done by May 1st so that I can have a month to edit and go through all of the pagination and everything else? So any task that I approach, I look at the timeline. When you're working on a job and you're financially getting by, you might not have all that you want, but you're doing okay, and you want to change. You want to do something that you're passionate about. You've always wanted to have a bookstore. Like one of the people that I worked with loved old books. And I said, all right, so what you're going to do is put an ad in the paper, and you're going to offer to buy old books. And she bought a bag of books for $20. She was so good at looking at old books that she found one book that she resold for $3,500.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She ended up, within 1 year, opening up a bookstore, and today she has this marvelous bookstore in Walnut Creek where it's filled with old books. And people can just drop off a bag of books and she'll give them $20.
Hmm.
If she had not thought her love and passion of being around books could turn into a business, she would have kept on working as an accountant. Now, how different is that? A left-brain, analytical position and somebody who is so right-brain, innovative, creative, curious, to be around all these wonderful old books.
Hmm.
Completely different lifestyle. And she said that more than 30 years of her life was spent existing one day at a time, looking forward to her weekends, counting the days until her vacation, and wasting 30 years just getting by. Now, every day, she jumps out of bed. She thinks about what books might show up at the store today.
Hmm. That's a great story. It reminds me of an adage that goes something like this. We spend our youth creating wealth, and then when we get older, we spend our wealth trying to regain our health. And it does seem like many people do it that way, but not our listeners. We're giving them the tools to become creative, to get unplugged from the stresses of modern life, to put the stresses of their life in the proper context, to discharge their stresses as they go along, to get excited about the future, to become fully present, to the divine source or inspiration, whatever it is that your belief system aligns with, and to let that flow through you on a daily basis, not fixing your ideas or your future based on what's been past. Can you comment on that?
You know, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that people face on a day-to-day basis, letting the past influence their decisions today.
Mm.
And every day, it's a clean slate. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. Everything in our past is to give us the richness that we need to have to make better decisions. There's no wrong that we've done. It's a lesson. And when we look at every learning experience as a lesson, we enter each day with the curiosity of a three-year-old, the first time they're allowed to go out into the backyard by themselves. It's a wonderful adventure. Life is a playground. So looking at each day as a new start, then we can create anything that we want. We don't have to be encumbered by what we're supposed to do, what we should do. Do you remember the saying that came up in the 80s, don't should on yourself?
Right.
You know, there is no supposed to be shoulds. We create this. We allow it or we repel it. Whatever it is that we are determined that we get in our lives, it's up to us.
Yes, that's powerful. That's powerful. Well, are there any specific methods or systems that you find helpful in moving people in this direction?
I think it's the determination. And I've known a lot of people who wish that they could do something. And the difference between wishing and actually realizing what they want is having goals. So setting a goal, by the end of this week, I will have this done, and nothing gets in the way. I'll skip lunch. I'll, you know, stay up an hour late. I'll get up an hour early, but I'm going to get this done. And then having it broken down into incremental steps so that nothing is overwhelming. If you talk to someone about writing a book, it seems like a huge, monumental project. But knowing that you can write 4 pages in an hour, it takes 2.5 hours to write a chapter of 10 pages.
Hmm.
I don't know anyone that can't create 2.5 hours in a week. A chapter a week, 15 weeks later, you have your book.
Right.
So anything that we need to accomplish, when we break it down into the small steps, and again, back to the timeline, give yourself ample time, allow for things that you can adjust. So, you know, you have different things that come up in your life that demand your time. Allow for those things, but don't let other people distract you. You are the only one that is responsible for what you want to accomplish in your life.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, on one hand, we need to develop a strategy, this timeline you're talking about, where we say, okay, at the end of this year, I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to make this transition to from becoming a lawyer to a professional writer or something like that. And then we break that down into these incremental steps, these small steps, the bite of the elephant one at a time, right?
Right.
And then at that point, once you have that laid out, then it's really important to focus on the work that's in front of you, not on the results, not on what's not on what's out there 3 months or 6 months ahead for you to do, because I think people get overwhelmed in their minds with that sort of thing. Like, oh my goodness, look at all this that I have to do. How am I ever going to get that done with my kids and these financial obligations and all these things? But if they bring it down, if they lay out the timeline as you're suggesting, break it down into these steps, and then just take one step at a time.
Exactly. It's in the springtime. It always reminds me. You think about, you know, Barry Bonds having the world record in home runs. And do you think that if he never showed up for spring training, that he would have been that successful?
No.
So, you know, a simple analogy, showing up, training, going through the exercises that it requires for you to reach that level of success for yourself requires some dedication. You know, there's a lot of excellent musicians out there that weren't out there playing stickball. They were in the house practicing their music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it that you want to focus on? And it's never too late to start.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, as we're closing here, Sharon, you've given our listeners some fantastic advice. And if they just apply this, step forward, be determined, establish their timeline, begin networking, be creative, let go of the things of the past, really create your life fresh, then they will be as successful as the 2,000 people that you have shown. But is there one tidbit of advice that you would like to offer or leave our listeners now?
I think the easiest way for people to create their own reality, which in my mind is, if I don't like what's going on in my life, it's up to me to change that reality. I don't need to have anyone else be at fault or to hold anyone else hostage for what's going on in my life. So in knowing that, if I focus on what I want and I know where I'm going and what I have to do to get there, there's nothing that's going to get in my way. Nothing can interfere with that unless I allow it.
And what would you say for someone that experiences the inevitable disappointment or discouragement along their way in trying to get to where they want to go along their timeline?
Well, I always think of Colonel Sanders. He approached 1,072 people before finally someone said, "I like the recipe, let's do the chicken." What if he had quit at 1,071?
Right. Right. Very good. Well, I think we've eaten half the elephant here so far. And I'm quite full, and I think this is a good place to end this dialogue, and I thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and thank you, Joseph.
Yes, and let's leave everyone information on how to get a hold of you. Your website is www.eliteleads.com. That's ELITELEADS.com. And there's a lot of information on the site there. I would highly encourage everyone to visit her site, especially order her books. They're very, very good for anybody embarking out on their own wanting to be successful. The Mixing It Up is a fantastic book. I consider Sharon to be the most networked, most connected person in the San Francisco Bay Area. And she talks about how to do that in her Mixing It Up book. And it really, really is about relationships. And she nails it on the head in that book. If you need inspiration about breaking free of your JOBS, Just Over Broke, buy that book, Just Over Broke Syndrome. And Sharon, thank you so very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you.